Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Casual Drifter. He is a songwriter here in Nashville, and he has a new album coming out later this year.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel, at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances from all of our guests, including Casual Drifter. Give that video and all of our others a like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. It helps us out a ton. Wait, when did you do your last, because right now I've seen you've been putting out like a bunch of singles, right? So like when was the last time you seriously like got in the studio and tried to like woodshed some stuff?
I feel like I'm woodshedding like every morning and night, depending on the situation. But as far as like getting into the studio, then we did that. We did initial tracking on the record in October of last year.
Nice.
Yeah, and then it'll be coming out in September of this year, so about a year.
And that was Mark Thorne's place, right?
Yeah, over at Mark's in Madison. Yeah.
It was so cool to have him in here and talk to him, too, because I've known Mark sort of peripherally for years, but it was fun to, like, you know, trap him in here.
Absolutely.
Tell us everything you know about everything music-related.
Yeah, I mean, I bet that'd be, like, fascinating for sure.
No, I'm sure that, the stuff that I've heard of it, I mean, it sounds fucking great. Like, I'm excited for the whole thing to come out. How's it feel like to sort of sit in it now?
It's good, man. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm like so detached from the process. That's why I think like early on in my recording endeavors, I was really obsessed with like doing everything myself, and basically for money reasons and also just control of the you know, output.
Money and control.
Just all the things that musicians are famously known to
what
want.
We're all after.
And we're exactly. all after it. Yeah. We're out the world domination. But yeah, so I basically, I started this project, Casual Drifter, in 2021 is the first single I released. And I started it actually as a side project from my psychedelic space rock band, Sci-Fi Country, RIP. So I was in that band out west, and we were kind of back and forth from LA, and primarily based in Arizona though, and kind of did that for a long time, and to varying degrees of success or whatever, and
as we all do.
It was an endeavor, but it was like something that was I think the music still holds up, and
that's awesome.
And it's cool, but yeah, it's like just life paths are different, and obviously with a pandemic and whatnot, it kind of derailed a certain amount of our plans, I guess. Yeah. Well, we were on tour during that whole debacle, and this is a cool story, so I'll tell it, and it does relate to Nashville. So basically, we went to Mardi Gras 2020,
okay.
And that was like known as the big super spreader event, right? And I mean, we had been on tour for about 20 days then, and we did another 10 days, and by the time we got to Nashville, it was March 13th. Pretty much D-Day of like, you know, everything's shutting down, and we played our last show at D's on March 13th, 2020 of the tour, and then basically beelined it, drove 24 hours straight back from all the way down 40 to Arizona to Flagstaff, where we were like living at the time. And I didn't have a place to live, man. I made a mistake, I guess. But it turned out to be all right. But I subletted my room for like a whole 2 months, because I was like, oh, I'll just bum around and hang out. I was gonna go like visit some friends after the tour and just kind of you know, see some sights or whatever. And that didn't work out too well. I ended up on my own couch for the first week of the pandemic, and then luckily a friend of mine was like, hey man, I just bought some land out in 29 Palms, California, so like out by Joshua Tree. So I ended up spending the first like month and a half of the pandemic in Joshua Tree, basically, and wrote some songs about that, and songs for this record there came through that.
Life is really just an excuse to write the next song.
The more
I live life, the more I just realize that it's like, oh, this is just an excuse to write another song.
Right. Yeah. And like, I think that's where the Casual Drifter moniker kind of came about. is just kind of like, okay, like I, for the better part of my adult life, I've like chased whatever impulse I had basically, which turns out you're not, it's not the best thing to do, but it you can survive doing that apparently. And yeah, it's fun, now to kind of, I don't know, be in a place where I can take on like actual responsibility and like be in a, you know, like be where I'm at and be happy with it and not just trying to like chase the next
thing. That's so beautiful.
So yeah. And Nashville's just been that, like, kind of because of the people here and because of the culture and that really the deeper understanding of music and like songwriting and like the feeling of being like, okay, like I'm not a freak of nature that I want to make music my living, and like, that's not crazy here. That's like, it's not a little hobby. It's not a, you know, it's not some far-fetched dream. It's something that people are pursuing. And I think that is what Nashville is, like has to offer as far as
there's something really beautiful about being in a place where it's, yes, it's really fucking hard and it's terrifying, but oh, like you see people do it. It seems attainable. There's something really nice about like, oh, like if I do this correctly and work my ass off, like, oh, I can make a living do in some way, shape, or form,
some level of
kind of in it together.
Yeah, exactly. There is something kind of really beautiful about that. That
it
I
helps,
think.
For
yeah,
sure.
It really does.
Definitely.
Why the decision to go under the pseudonym Casual Drifter? Like, why? I love that.
So,
I fucking, but
yeah,
how
so
did that kind of transpire?
It's funny
for you?
Because I, like, as I say that, I never intended to live in Nashville and make a name for myself. So I, I don't know. It basically came out, it actually came out of a failed band I was going to be in LA. And I created all of the kind of back end of it. I created the Instagram, I created the email, all of that stuff. So basically when that band didn't become a thing, I was stuck with that. And I also had a bunch of random music on a hard drive that I wanted to release. And I was like thinking like, oh, this will just be like, I'll just dump a bunch of random stuff. So if you look at the first release I did, it's actually a very... it's an instrumental, like psychedelic, like drone song that I made on GarageBand that I thought was good. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. And then I released like this kind of like dark CD, like acoustic song after that. And then kind of got into more of like what I'm doing now with,
that's a cool trajectory for that.
Yeah. Cause I mean, more or less, like I didn't have any intention of again, making a name for myself in Music City, you know? But I'm here and, more or less it's, I've thought about just going by my name at this point. But it's complicated, man. My SEO is fantastic on Casual Drifter. If you search
also,
Casual
Drifter.
Also,
it's a great name, too, honestly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just funny because people come up to me in Nashville and they're like, Drifter, what's up? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, hey, man, like, you know, like, I get it, but like, it's...
But I do have a name, too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just what's funny about Nashville is like, that kind of has been going through my head, like, thinking about releasing this album and kind of the steps, you know, leading up to that is like, okay, like this is going to be it. Like, this is it. Like Casual Drifter is going to be my thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, kind of like going with that and, just hoping that it like, I ultimately really reaches a greater audience where it doesn't really matter what the name of the project is that like, the music is good enough that it's that is what it is.
And I kind of like the idea too of having something, maybe not necessarily to hide behind, but something, you know, a mask that you can present in theater. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
like
totally, man.
Something about,
I mean,
that I think
it's
is really
definitely
beautiful.
A mask.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not denying that at this point. That is something that also I think about in reverse though, where I'm like, I maybe going by my name would help that out. And just the authenticity thing and like the fact that like everyone
fuck
else
authenticity.
Is, yeah. No, I guess it's like, to me, it's like, yeah, like I'm like looking at it as a creative endeavor that doesn't have to be so, raw and real all the time. But honestly, my next songs are going to be extremely raw and real and definitely like more, on a different trajectory, I guess, than the stuff I have been working on.
That's what I should call the next album. More raw, more real.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So where were you at? Because I know you're from Indiana originally, right? Where were you prior to this?
Prior to this, I was in L.A. So, and then before that, kind of Arizona.
Gotcha. But
yeah, more or less, I mean, starting out, I started kind of doing the van life thing pretty early on in like 2012 or so. And I bought a van for like $700 from this dude in Indianapolis. And at the time I was working as a bellhop at the JW Marriott and, you know, doing that whole thing. And I had successfully saved up $600. And my buddy was like, "Hey man, I'm going to move to Portland." And I was like, "All right, I just bought this van. Let's go." So we loaded up all his stuff and drove to Portland. And kind of as soon as I hit the New Mexico Texas line, basically when you hit the desert for the first time, I was very much changed by that whole experience. And more or less, I also drove 36 hours straight from Indiana to Flagstaff, my first endeavor. And I was just like smoking cigarettes and drinking Red Bull and listening to Tombstone Blues on repeat by Bob Dylan. So yeah, that's kind of, you know, a little bit of an origin story. But yeah, from there, I kind of, I bummed around a lot for a while. Did a lot of like different, you know, seasonal work, seasonal jobs, mainly like trimming weed and stuff and hanging out in Northern California. And then I ended up in New Orleans around like 2014. Mm-hmm. And I was in New Orleans about 4 years, like on and off, like traveling in the summer. And yeah, I ended up busking down there. Like I basically just moved into town in a separate van. My other van that I'd been traveling in got stolen. And I bought like a 1984 Astra van the next time I was in.
Oh,
it.
Nice.
Yeah, it was crazy. Nice. I really wish I had a picture of that because I have my 2000s Astra van now. It's a very cool van. But that one was like crazy Dixie cup paint job, kind of purple cool. And like blue. It was like crazy. It was cool. And like the other crazy part is it had no speedometer or gas tank, and somehow I made it from like Indiana to LA to New Orleans. And then
that's a brave man, right?
Yeah,
so you just have to guess where your gas is at.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you drive with your eyes closed, or you not believe in God that much?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I actually did a ride share during that time frame with these two like Christian missionary guys that were going to Austin, and we were out in West Texas in El Paso, and they were like, I made the mistake of like not getting gas in West Texas while like going from El Paso to Austin, which is just like, you know, 10 hours of absolutely nothing. And we were like, I think we saw a sign that said like 100 miles to the next gas station. And we were looking at I was doing the math and I was like, "Guys, I don't know if we're going to make it or not. Like, this is kind of wild." And so they're like, "Look, we'll pray about it." And I was like, "Okay, we're going to pray about it. Like, let's do that."
How'd that work out? It worked fine.
There I don't know. It was probably, it was
power of the Lord.
Could have been,
right there.
Yeah, divine intervention. I made it out of West Texas.
That's fantastic. So you've got the new single that's going to be coming out shortly. Give me kind of the back, because honestly, all the stuff you played sounded fantastic. And the one that just dropped, I guess what, a couple weeks ago now, that one sounds fire. Like the production on that, I mean, the song itself is awesome.
Yeah,
it's totally. Everything on that, the production. So who's playing on, I guess to like backtrack on my question, who's playing on the single that just dropped?
So the single that just dropped is Going for Broke, which is the title track of my record. So my record is going to be called Going for Broke, out September 5th.
That is a fantastic title for an album.
Yeah,
a good title for an album.
I was debating on it, but yeah, I think it's cool, and it's it kind of tells the story. A lot of the songs that deal with kind of like hardship of, or, you know, money and lack thereof, you know, that kind of thing, and being an artist and whatnot. And, but yeah, so, let's see, let's go down the list of who's playing on Going for Broke.
Yeah, huh? Here we go.
All right. So we got, first and foremost, we got Chris Weisbecker on the drums, and mixing and production.
Rusick alum right there. Fucking the man.
Absolutely.
Everyone go.
Dude
go,
does everything.
Yeah. Fucking he does, check out all his
does
stuff.
Does the best. The best in the biz.
He's kind of an asshole though, so like,
yeah,
don't
you know,
too much.
Well, he's from Jersey, so it's like, it's one of those things where
Russell. So anyway, let's move on from Chris before we
my buddy and roommate, and now we both live over on Edwin Street now, and Elijah White, he played bass and background vocals, that's my core band right now.
Yeah, we should get Elijah here. He's such a nice guy.
Dude, he's great.
Fucking and great music. I've only played him with him like jams and stuff. Fucking fire musician.
Yeah. Extremely good at music for
sure.
That'd
be fun to hang with him.
Yeah. And be news to him that you think he's good because he's always like, whatever. I'm like, no, man, you're really good.
He's really got a great fucking ear.
It's awesome, yeah. And he's got a single coming out too, so pretty soon, I think. After that, let's see, we got Sam Talmadge on guitar. He just moved into town from New York. Nice. He's a fantastic Telecaster guitar player. Really great dude. Cooper Dickerson played steel on it. Dude's fucking legendary.
Oh, yeah. We haven't had him on, but I was just listening to something he was on. He's a fucking killer.
Yeah, he's out on the road with Kelsey Walden.
Nice.
And played on her new record. And let's see. After that, who else is on? I believe Cannon is on slightly on the organ, which I didn't I didn't post, and I feel bad, but I did. I boost the post before I could edit it. So Cannon, if you're watching, I'm sorry, buddy. You are on that. I just couldn't.
That's another beast of a player, right there.
We should get him on.
We should really.
Oh yeah,
we haven't had a piano player.
Yeah, we haven't.
Now I should definitely
hit him. Yeah, he's a monster. Super super sweet guy too. That'd be killer. And then you did it like we were talking about. You did it at Mark's, which is awesome.
Yeah,
I
mean, absolutely.
I feel like everything that I hear that comes out of his place is just. Wow, chef's kiss.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And we kind of did it like piecemeal there, like live in studio. Before I forget, I do need to make a shout out to my good friends Matt Cornish and Laurel Edwards, who were Ooze and Oz background vocals on the record.
Cannot forget the Ooze and Oz right there.
Yeah, it actually changed the game for sure. And actually, Chris does background vocals that are very buried in the background of that, which was cool to
Chris
see.
Chris can sing some fire. He did a single I did a couple years ago. He did the same kind of thing. Like, just we buried some. I was looking for a specific thing, and Chris was like, let me give it a crack myself. Fucking nailed it. He has such a great voice for some backing vocals.
Yeah, he's a really cool,
it's very different.
His solo stuff too, like his solo stuff he's recorded, man, is like really.
Yeah.
His voice in it is like really really interesting.
All right, let's get back to shitting on Chris now.
But okay, for sure.
No, it is. I do like the stuff that he's been making kind of solo was making. It's fucking cool. It's unique.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, that's a solid lineup right there, man.
Absolutely,
a solid lineup.
And couldn't have done it anywhere else but Nashville, what, you know.
On a sort of production front, so like songwriting aside, just on a production front, did you have certain bands or artists or albums in mind, certain sounds you wanted to capture, or was it just sort of a very in the moment kind of hodgepodge of just whatever you happened to be doing then? Like, did you have stuff you were sounds you were shooting for?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I think what inspired this one at least was just the like sheer talent surrounding me at the time, and like just friends of mine, just basically like trusting that like if I hire Sam to do guitar, if I hire Cooper to do steel, if I have Chris record it, it's all gonna sound. It's gonna sound the way it sounds, but it's gonna sound good. Like I know it's gonna sound good, and kind of just like freeing myself of the burden of like deciding all that stuff was like a huge deal for me, because it was like definitely like there's an amount of trust in that, they have to have. But like, I kind of like let go and let the pros take care of it.
That's a smart way to do it. I mean, I think that's a beautiful way of saying it. There's a certain level of trust that's necessary. And I think, it allows you to do what you're supposed to do, which is direct. And if you need to help guide everything, you can do that. But you also just recognize that, you're here for a reason. And I want you to creatively do what you feel like is necessary. That's a really, I think that tends to yield the best results. Not that there's one right way to go about any of that stuff, but I do think that tends to be what generally gets you the best results.
Yeah, because you're I think also it's maintains your sanity through the entire process. Because for me, it's like, I mean, I've the first four or five singles I did where I was painstakingly not only like mixing, but learning to mix in the process of like trying to get these songs where I wanted them to be. And just hours and hours of like stuff that I am just not good at. Like, and you gotta just, sometimes you gotta admit that like, the, you know, like what you're, like my strong suit is just writing songs. Like it's not anything other than that. And I needed to like be like, you know, you kind of need to hire some stuff out, you know, you need to like lighten the load a little bit.
And there's something... you don't wanna spread yourself too thin.
Yeah, because it's just, it becomes exhausting. And then by the time the song's out, you're like, I've heard this song 1,000 times and I don't even, I never want to hear this again. Why would anyone else want to hear it? Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So luckily, like, kind of, I lost a bit of that. Or, like, you know, I didn't have to deal with that as much. And I barely listened to the songs in comparison to what, you know, what I did. Yeah. So it was good.
Well, there's probably something really healthy in that,
Yeah, for real, dude. Like, yeah. It's money well spent, you know.
Oh, that's a, yeah, that's a nice way to say it, you know. What I know, this is going to be the first album out under Casual Drifter.
Yeah.
What's your experience in the past of release? Have you released any kind of full lengths or anything under different pseudonyms or in band context, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I'm not promoting this by any means, but I did go by Benjamin London for a while, and I released two albums that are on Spotify that are really bad recordings. They're like terrible recordings that I did all myself. And I basically spent a summer in Arizona recording when I first moved out there. Shout out Coronville, Arizona. Yeah, I made that in like my mom's little garage space she had or whatever. And yeah, those are really bad recordings. Great songs. And one or two of those songs are actually on this record.
Oh, awesome.
So that's cool. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, one of the songs, Southern Bells, like, wrote in 2015, so it's like a 10-year-old song. Which, yeah, I think is interesting, spending that much time with a song and playing it that much. It's like, it's cool to be able to actually record it correctly. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, so that's my experience. And then, yeah, also just my band and I, we varying degrees of success of recording like singles and EP and stuff. But yeah, this is actually my first like official full album, full length album in history, I would say.
That's killer.
That's worth a damn. You know?
Yeah. As being your first full length, what, you know, because you know, in a way it's like your first album, you know what I mean? Like what was the process like of figuring out what do I want here? What do I not want here? How did you even just begin to edit what's going to be on the record? I know this kind of might seem like a silly question, but when you're kind of starting from, not starting from square one, but when there's nothing that's come before in that form, how do you decide what do I want there?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to what I had to work with, you know. It's like I have, you know, many notebooks of lists of songs of like, this is the album. This is the album. No, this is the album. No, this is going to be the album. And then you kind of like more or less just like, okay, what works the best? I played a handful of shows kind of like in like leading up to it to kind of get kind of like test some things out, but more or less like trial and error or like trial and error of like which songs work and which in this context too. And I was trying to kind of lean into like a more country sound because I mean, it's definitely like more of what I've been listening to in the last like 5 years or so. And even before that, really, honestly, I kind of grew up on like Woody Guthrie is like the reason I play music for sure. And obviously like Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Pipeline, like Neil Young, that whole deal, just like classic songwriter stuff. But, I think like making the record a certain way wasn't really in my mind. I guess it was more like, okay, these are the songs that I think are good enough that are that I would like to release. But also, that being said, I just remembered I did do like a solo tour out west and back last March. And I played all of those songs pretty much every night. I kind of like, I do this thing where I do like to play the same set like over and over and over just because it's just like the way you can express certain you start to learn your songs like inside and out that way. And I think that's like a really important thing that some people kind of like gloss over sometimes when you want to just be doing the newest thing all the time. And that's something that I think I heard like Charlie Crockett talk about that once, where he was like, he's saying like the release cycle of music is strange because he's already probably written like 3 or 4 albums before his next album even comes out. So he can't even play the songs that he's like currently working on. And I'm kind of in that situation now, but yeah, getting to the point where it was like, okay, like I'm done doing singles, I want to do a whole album, was like a journey in like, okay, like figuring out which songs make sense on an album, I guess, you know?
Yeah. And there's a craft to making an album too, which not to say that it's a lost art, because there are people like Brian or myself, or you might fall into this too, who consume music in that way. I love putting on an album. Mm-hmm. And there really is a craft to making that flow work. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's one thing, you know, it's one thing to just throw 10, 12 songs together. It's another thing to make something that, you know, it doesn't have to be, it's not always going to be, you know, Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah,
but of course. just getting 10, 12 tunes to sit in a way where you can press play beginning to end and feel like, oh, that's the album. It's such a magical thing. And it does, it takes time to like craft that and to get good at it's a skill like anything else to be able to even just sequence an album, let alone all the other shit that goes into it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's again, like, I think like playing the songs live like night after night definitely helps to solidify the flow of it, because I definitely think in that terms too, is like I don't want to play this song after this song.
I'm very
meticulous about that, and I pretty much keep my set like exactly the way it is currently. Like,
I'm curious, when you just talking about crafting a set list versus crafting a an album sequence, do you find that they work the same? Because I find crafting a set list is very different than crafting a do you find that they're the same thing for you? Because for me, I find they're different, but that just might be, you know, the way that I do things with my weird head.
Yeah, I think like for me, it's like I have a tendency to just want to like put the gas on like at all times and just be like go, 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 go. And I think with the record that I'm, the way I structured the record, I think is basically like bangers, 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 you know, like just bangers only, kind of as many as I can get.
Smart way to do it. Yeah.
Right, right. And I think that's, it's like people's attention spans and the way things are just like lends itself to like, you just got to put the heat out. Like I was debating on putting Going for Broke out first, because I was like, I think this is like the best recorded one. Like, or like it's, the it's, overall yeah, the best.
It just sounds, it's a, yeah. it's a great, it's a lethal combination. It's a great song that's got great production. And when you can get that, like, oh, I think that's a smart one to lead with, man.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. And then that being said, with my live set currently isn't the album straightforward. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think live you can do, I think there's something about kind of like drawing people in.
Yeah, for sure.
In a live setting where it's like you draw them in, and ideally you're playing the heaters like middle of the set where it's like people mm-hmm. are like engaged and maybe like dancing.
You almost need to like rev up to it a little bit more, you know, like it's,
yeah.
And you can get like, kinda, I find, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine, dude. Go ahead.
I just find that like in a live setting too, it's really, and this, again, this might just be the way I am. It's really hard to play too slow. This is going to sound really basic. It's really hard to play two slow songs back to back. You know, it's like little shit like that where like on a record, you might be able to get away with that.
To be
like
honest,
there's worlds where you can do that, but like, I'm not going to go up there and do that with a band and get away with that. You know what I mean?
No, I don't Casey's think anyone's getting away with the hard one.
Yeah. And Brian's been there with me, I'm sure.
No, and I think it is ultimately about like keeping people entertained.
Yeah,
know?
No, exactly.
And that's like kind of another aspect of it, and kind of like like varying the tunes. And like, I am also like very staunchly against like playing this in the same key, even like I don't,
I try to,
each song is probably in a different key.
Seriously, when I'm sequencing a set list or an album, it's stupid. It's not even keys. It's like, okay, just chord progressions. You know what I mean? Like, there's a 2-5-1 in the beginning of this one. There's a 2, maybe like not, you know what I mean? It's like, it's stupid. Minute shit like that, that you just try to like, it's so subliminal when you're actually listening to it. Like, it's so, everything's below the surface.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. It's kind of like a puzzle to try and get that to sit correctly, but that's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, like live, there's certain songs that are just closer songs, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, honestly, Dustin Bothwell comes to mind when I think of that. He always closes a set with, if they quit making whiskey. You know, that's like his closer song. And I'm like, hell yeah, that's your closer song.
That is a great fucking song.
Also, is that on his record that he did?
I don't think it is, actually.
Yeah.
I think he wrote that after the record came out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause I think,
that is a great song. I remember the first time I heard him play the live, I actually think I heard him play that at D's.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, and, I told him, I was like, dude, that's a fucking banger of a song.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is one of my favorite things in life, is when your friends come up with something and you just go, dude, I just want to tell you, that's fucking good. Like, that's such a good feeling when someone, you know, just makes something, you think, God damn. Like, I'm going to sit up at night and fucking work my ass off to try and get, you know, a verse out of the way just because of how good that fucking song is. You know?
Yeah, the motivation's real for sure.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's like, and that's one of the joys I think of living here, is you just have more of that in life.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Any excuse to do that is.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I'll find myself sometimes, I'm like, I went to like 5 shows today and I heard the best songs I've ever heard by the people that I'm basically like are my best friends at this point.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is that about? You know? It's just like something that, you know, it's definitely a big, you know, perk of the job, you know?
And it can motivate you. It can get you rolling. Alexa, could you grab me another one of these guys? Is that okay? Oh, they're out already. Right. Perfect. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Prepared.
Oh, look at that. Ugh. This is the fun part of the show where we get more beverages out, you know?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's been... do you have... I guess it was
rocking this.
Sweet. Maybe.
Herb.
What did you start with music-wise? Like, where did all this begin for you?
I started playing guitar. I actually have a really funny like guitar origin story. So I was really into like rap and hip hop early on. I think the first artist I really gravitated towards on my like own personal level was Nelly.
Oh, nice.
And, I just got really into fucking Nelly, and I was like, dude, Nelly is best. Like, this is the greatest.
He was yours. That's the important thing.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. It was great. And through that,
he had
like
some bangers.
A banger, dude. Country Grammar is still a banger for sure. I was gonna actually, I have this like really cool, like Topo Chico, wallet thing.
It's
like,
dang, I got this in look Austin. At that. Nice. Man.
South by Southwest.
You hear that, Topo? Start sponsoring the pod. You know,
yeah.
Let's
that's
go.
Right.
Come
look.
On.
Let's go. All right. Come on.
Anyways, yeah, let's get a Topo Chico sponsorship. But anyways, yeah, I got really into like hip hop and, you know, Notorious B.I.G., Bone Thugs, that kind of thing.
Nice.
And that somehow led to me getting into like ICP for like a... I I was a juggalo for like 2 weeks. And then I discovered, I know it's messed up.
Man, actually, that's a very interesting subculture that never really understood, but it's fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating. And,
so fascinating.
Yeah,
no idea.
So yeah, like I kind of went down this dark like portal for a second, being juggalos. Kind of coincided with the first time I ever got drunk, and just really funny stuff. But that kind of like that kind of was a wake up call. Through that, I actually just started. I kind of went full 180 and just started listening to Blink-182 like almost religiously, like within all other realms of like pop punk and stuff like that. So Blink's definitely like the origin of like my guitar learning guitars. Like I learned like Damn It and like all those classic pop punk tunes.
Yeah, that was an early one for me too.
Yeah, and it was just like so easy. And then, you know, you kind of start going down the rabbit hole of like, you know, Nirvana, getting the Nirvana songbook and like the, you know, just like going through that whole thing. I thought I really wanted to play drums when I was a kid, but my uncle's actually a drummer, and he gave me one of the snares, and I was like just like banging on this snare for a long time, and my mom was just like, hey, maybe like you could, I have a guitar, like you could just like, I actually have a
Mom's
really nice
like,
acoustic guitar. It's so nice.
That's fantastic.
And quiet.
Yeah.
And but yeah, my mom's always been super supportive. She actually she played guitar like kind of early on, like before I was born, and just doing open mics and stuff around Indiana, which there's some cool pictures of her like playing on a bale of hay and stuff and all that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and then yeah, kind of chilled out for a while when I was born, and, you know, got serious, and then turns out though my family actually created a band in 2008. They formed a band, and it was originally just my uncle and his best friend Wally and Jeff, or Jeff's my uncle and Wally's his good friend, and they just started getting together on Saturdays and jamming, and they call it Freak, you know, and just like old dudes getting together playing like Warren Zevon and like friggin'
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just really good, like old Beatles, old Kink stuff, like, yeah, you know, and that kind of has been a thing for the last like 15 years or so. I kind of like, I had already been into music, and I went through the phase of like pop punk to hardcore to like I was in a Christian metal band for 6 months, and then I got into like a party hardcore band after that, which was really confusing.
Nice.
To be honest, it was like really crazy, like going from like praying before a show to like taking shots of whiskey and like smoking a blunt was like kind of rough. It was like a weird transition to make, especially in Indiana.
Well, you know, when you're doing it for the love of the game, you know, you just gotta
in theory, I've been a working musician since I was like 15 years old. Yeah, I was just from there, just kind of gradually, I got into like Modest Mouse and that kind of thing, the whole indie thing, and
nice.
You know, like that kind of classic. Ooh. early 2000s.
Was there a songwriter that first grabbed your attention where you kind of, because I feel like a lot of people go through life, even people who love music, they go through life sort of ignorant of the process of songwriting. It's just sort of, you don't really think about it. There are songs you like, and there are songs you dislike. And then it's like, at some point, some of us sort of peek behind the curtain and we think, oh shit, someone made this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And was there a particular artist for you that you had that moment with where you got that peek behind the curtain? You thought, oh, I like that. I want to do that.
Yeah. God, this is the most cliche answer, but it's definitely Bob Dylan. I mean, it's got to be. So basically, I think this was like, I was 19 going on 20, and I've been playing acoustic guitar for a long time, but and I've been going to like a community college in Indiana, and like I went home for the summer, and my mom had a record collection. I just went down to this antique store, and we were living in this really cool like 70s like tripped out house for a minute, which was like really fun, and I had like a drum set up there, and like it was like I had a whole get up. It was pretty cool. And one of the records she has was Bob Dylan's Basement Tapes, which is like, to me, is like the pinnacle of like what he would did in a lot of ways. It's just like, but it's also like a very like, it's janky and it's not like
it's
polished.
Yeah,
it's just what it
raw.
Is. Yeah, exactly. And so the songs on there really like transformed my idea. And I had listened to Bob Dylan before that, kind of like his early stuff, and gotten into all that. And then, yeah, just kind of hyper fixated on Dylan for like 4 years or so. And you know, that has varying degrees of things, but yeah, I just basically learned to write through that process, and also like really into like the whole like Jack Kerouac thing and then just like the beat stuff. I used to read a lot of like Kurt Vonnegut and stuff like that because he's from Indiana. So just like, you know, kind of classic stuff, I feel like. And yeah, got in a few bands early on, did this like kind of like two-piece garage rock band with my buddy in Indianapolis, and we were kind of trying to be like Bob Dylan and the OCs. So it was like we had like this, it was like old versus meets new kind of thing. And I mean, through that too, like I think Woody Guthrie is like one of the biggest influences on my like current trajectory or whatever it is, like just from, because I now realize that all those songs that you were singing were basically like what people like call old time, like that's, they're just old time songs, like that he was making his own, and also obviously writing his own as well. So yeah, that's kind of a, I'd say like Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, it's good tie.
Yeah,
there,
that's for, a good, I mean, for, if you're gonna, yeah, if you're gonna spend that time meditating on the process, that's a good career to study, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, and yeah, and I mean, I love Woody too. I mean, Woody's been a huge influence on my songwriting and my, this, just the shit that I make. I think he was a very fascinating person, and I think a lot of ways he's a very unique figure in American culture too, because he's in a lot of ways one of the first, if not the first semblance of all of these things kind of culminating in the American songwriter.
Yeah.
And, like the, and he had, and he certainly had his contemporaries and other artists that I adore.
Well, it's like, as I say that, that makes me think of like Jimmy Rogers, which is like, yeah, Jimmy exactly. Rogers is like definitely like probably the first to do that. Definitely. And like Jimmy Rogers.
I truly think Jimmy Rogers is one of the great American artists, full stop.
Absolutely.
I think he is just unbelievable.
It's wild. And like his life was like really, super interesting and really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's in like the Ken Burns documentary on country music. Mm-hmm. He goes into depth about Jimmy Rogers' life, and yeah, it's fascinating, man. It's great. And I do think like Jimmy Rogers kind of paved the way for all the great country guys.
Absolutely.
For sure, like where it was like, you know, Bob Wills, Ernest Tubb. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, Jimmy's Webb also Pierce, interesting because there's There are a few sort of iterations of genre where you can see somebody embody the thing in totality out of nowhere, because nothing obviously exists in a vacuum, but you see, oh yeah, shit, that's country music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and don't get me wrong, again, he had his contemporaries, he had his influences like anyone, but then all of a sudden it just takes one person like that to somehow imbibe all of this, whatever he was going for, into a singular thing. Yeah. And I do, I mean, we really do have, and there's, again, I keep making sort of, you know, caveats here, but there are other people involved, but you don't have country music without him. And that's a very, there's something very unique about him in that regard, where he does kind of show up. Yeah. He does show you the thing in totality somehow, all of a sudden, like a flash of lightning. And there's something just stunning about that. I mean, yeah, it's just, and the structure, I think even, everything.
Yeah, just like his, the whole thing, his like kind of like the way he dressed, the way he like lived. He like, he basically was like living,
it was
like
all of it. Yeah,
yeah, he was living the cowboy dream, kind of whatever it was at the time, and kind of was able to capture that and capture an audience and all that, and then kind of die in obscurity like so many others, you know, like, or not in obscurity, but like, you know, I forget, I think he like died of tuberculosis or something.
It's interesting when I think you take that pause to kind of look back on the stuff that influenced you, because we all have those things that got us to it, whatever those catalysts were to actually, you know, kick us in the butt and do the thing.
Yeah.
I always find it interesting to look back on those and see which ones hold up and which ones maybe don't hold up so much. But I mean, that's a very solid foundation to build off of right there, you know?
Yeah, totally. And then, yeah, it's kind of like you get the information, and then what you do with it, it's up to you, you know? It's like, yeah.
It's a very nice way to say it. So the new one coming out, Come This Far, what's that's obviously kind of same folks on that. mm-hmm. right? Same lineup there.
Yeah.
That one's a little bit more like, just in terms of structure, that one's almost more, maybe not narrative, but more autobiographical in a way. Like, do you find when you're writing, like for me, I at this point in my life, for quite a long time now, I really exclusively write in character. So for you, mm-hmm. when you're writing, are you conscious of the level of sort of, I don't know how I'll say it, but the level in which you are being autobiographical, or does that sort of not enter into your mind in that way?
I think it does enter into my mind that way, but honestly, like, I think I ride the line of like character versus kind of myself. Like all the songs I've written are more or less out of experience of like my own life or the things in which I've witnessed or whatever, you know.
And there's a certain level of not being able to escape that regardless, you know.
Yeah, of course. That too. Of course. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you're kind of like, I have written about other things and other you know, kind of like historical events or whatever, you tie some of that in. But yeah, with the thing about going for broke and coming this far is that I wrote those almost in the same day. Like, I basically just like wrote both of those back to back, and then we kind of came this thing. Like, it was like, okay, this song and this song, like, these are the two songs right now, you mm-hmm. know. And I got really, I just, you know, kind of, you kind of obsess over what it's going to be and figuring it out. And you kind of, I think sometimes you get lucky too, like figuring it out, you know. It's not always like that. And I do think like these songs are like two of the strongest on the record and more or less are autobiographical. But particularly Come This Far is very much, I say on stage, it's a song about places I've been, places I intend to go. And yeah, it kind of came through too. I was booking a tour or along this route that basically like is every place I rattle off in the song. It is more or less was where I went on that tour. So mm-hmm. it kind of like coincided with that. I was kind of like thinking about what it was going to be like to be out on the road again and doing the thing. And like, I, you know, just out in my van, out in the desert, hanging out, playing music. And, yeah, I was stoked on it. And then kind of, also that song is sort of, I would say about, it's about not giving up as a musician. I think it's like a really important, like the chorus is probably my favorite chorus I've ever written. And it's just, and the tag is just like, you think I've come this far just to go nowhere. So it's basically like saying all these places I've gone and all the things I've done and all the, you know, the, you kind of like life is happening and happens fast. Right. But like, we're, able to, kind of capture it and enjoy it, for what it is. But, sorry, kind of.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I think it's beautiful.
But yeah, what I mean to say is that it's sort of like it's like the line is like, I've had some hard traveling lately, but someday I won't care. Do you think I've come this far just to go nowhere? You know, so it's like basically like we're all working towards something, right? And how we get there is all various degrees of success and failure and success and all these, you know, all these things that we all like want for ourselves in our lives, but can't quite seem to get it, you know. And that's like kind of the theme of a lot of that tune, is just like trying to prove that I've done the work, you know, mm-hmm. to myself, I guess, and then be like, hey, like I've actually gone a lot of places, done a lot of things, and like I've come pretty far for where I'm at, you know. And got to just like celebrate that, I guess.
I think,
you know?
Part of it too is also just recognizing, I think this is one of the things the song does well, is recognizing that the point of this is not to cross the finish line. The point of this is to do the thing.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Like it's the process of doing the thing that is actually the fulfillment of the thing itself.
Yes,
and I think for a lot of people, and maybe you're the same way, but people like myself who have such a A to B to C to D kind of mindset with things. Like that's just the way that I go through the world. You know, that can be a hard lesson to learn, especially as a young person, because you want, when you have that sort of disposition to attack things in that way, that can be as simple of a lesson as it is. It can be a hard thing to internalize and just realize, oh no, like just do it because you love the process of doing the thing. And because you can continue, you will never master this thing, right? You will only ever continue to improve. And I mean, you know, God knows if you keep at it, you'll be a infinitely better songwriter when they put you in the ground than you are today. But just do the thing because you're compelled to do it. And that's where the joy comes from. And I think some people, again, as silly and as simple as that may seem, some people's disposition allows them to learn that lesson faster. And other idiots like myself, you know, you kind of have to get there eventually.
Yeah, of course.
But you get there eventually.
Or you never do.
Yeah, honestly, or you never, you like, just die bitter.
My whole thing is that this for one, being creating in general is not a linear path, and I am super. I would love for it to be a linear endeavor. You know, something that's like, hey, I do this and this happens. But it's more or less that I do this and we'll see what happens. You know, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy. It's a crazy thing for someone with like I want things to be cut and dry. I want things to work out. But I think also the point is to enjoy it, because if you're not enjoying it, then it basically, if you get to that point where you thought you wanted to be and you're not happy when you're there, there wasn't any point to begin with. Like, you didn't actually do the thing that you were trying to do.
Actually, funny enough, speaking about Bob Dylan, he has one of my favorite quotes on this. He says, you know, happiness is the end result of doing the thing that makes you happy.
Yeah.
And it's the simplest idea in the world, but it's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I mean, happiness is the thing that happens when you do the thing that makes you happy. And I think that there's some incredible wisdom in that. And I think you have to just sort of give yourself up to the process and know that there's just not a finish line. You know, like somebody's just going to turn the Nintendo 64 off in the middle of the game. Like, it's just going to happen. You kind of have to be okay with that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, we're all going to be alive on this planet as long as we're going to be. And like, you might as well enjoy what you're doing while you're here and do the thing. And I think too, like, that's what I find so inspiring about being in Nashville, is like realizing that, yeah, it's never really over. The learning is like is constant. And like, I think as a young person, I thought one day I'll stop having to worry about all this stuff, or stop having to learn and grow and exist on a plane of being a human, what it is. And I think with being here, it's like I see the dedication that people twice my age have to their craft still. Mm-hmm. And maybe no one will ever know they existed, like, technically, but people around them will know, and people in town will know, and people, you know, there's obviously, we all get the opportunity to affect the people we get to affect, you know, and to like be the best version of yourself you can be. And I think that's a constant, like, kind of progression. And I think that what trips people up is the fact that, like, it never ends. Like, it's not supposed to end. And that's actually, like, life would be kind of, like, more or less a drag if it didn't. So it's like, I think it's like setting the bar high and keeping up with what you want to do and what you can do. And what is available is, like, that's the best you can do with it all.
And so, continuing to push that bar up higher and higher as you continue, hopefully, to ascend and keep going on the path. Another thing I wanted to ask you too, your voice. I love your singing voice. It's so distinct. And one thing that I don't think, when you're working with any genre, right, there are patterns that you're going to see, right, in everything, right, from instrumentation to structure to, you know, just singing voice. I think a lot of people don't think of the singing voice as, they don't picture it as an instrument, although I very much think that it is. How did you get to the place where you felt like you had your distinct your way of singing, your phrasing, your actual intonation, like how did you, what was the process throughout your life to find something that felt like it was yours? Cause it's very idiosyncratic and I love it. It's incredibly distinct. Like I don't confuse your voice with someone else's.
Yeah.
How did you get to a place in your life where you felt like, okay, this is me, or are you not there yet?
Oh no, I appreciate that, man. And, so the thing about that is I think, I mean, I started, playing music, in this form, through like busking on the street. So, yeah, it was like down in New Orleans, busking on Royal Street, living out of my van for the first like 3 or 4 months I was living there. And yeah, I kind of continued to do that for like 4 years on and off, and like traveling and doing various different like busking tours and things of that nature. So I definitely learned a lot from doing that, and kind of basically being able to test out and yell and be as loud as I wanted to be. Also, I do think that harmonica is a huge part of how I learned to like control my voice and breath and stuff like that. And really just like pick out melody, because melody is like the one thing I'm really drawn to when it comes to writing. And it's like also cadence and like kind of like rambling off things in a style of like, you know, just like I like the way like words fit together. And like sometimes, again, like it's not really I'm not really cognizant of it at all times, but yeah, I like to be able to kind of, I did a lot of writing early on too, I would say. Like I was really into staying up late and writing, like usually like alone, just like fucking writing my ass off for, you know, I would basically be like, there's an empty page, fill the page, empty page, fill the page, make sure you're filling the page every time you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like basically as time goes on, tailoring that to songwriting. So now when I go to write, I write a song out. I don't write like a whole memoir about, you know, some random stuff that like I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I kind of miss
the core of the
thing. I was really into like poetry and stuff for a while too, and just kind of you know, the way words fit together and stuff has always been fascinating to me. And yeah, through that, kind of just like streamlined the process as much as possible, and just kind of like got into songwriting as a structured thing. And more or less whenever I have an idea now, I just get a brief demo going, and then I just write it out, try to get it done as quickly as possible, man, and move on to the next one. Yeah.
Yeah, there's I do think the more that I do this, it is all about editing. And the songwriters that I, whenever I hear a line in a song, or maybe it's a song in totality, that really floors me, it's because there's no fat. Like you can't take a word out, or you can't shift a note in the melody, and it's just perfect as it is. And like that, I think that skill set of being able to edit to that degree is what makes someone go from competent to great, is to really hone that. Cause you know, it is hard. It is hard just to go from nothing to something, right? Like that, just to go from that blank page to anything is incredibly difficult, but to edit that page down to the thing and nothing else. Like I really do think of it like sculpting. It's like, you know, you can, and that's why to me, I used to at least go through a similar process of just almost like word vomit, get it all out and then edit down, right? You can always, it's always easier to subtract, right?
Yeah.
And I think that there's just something so, that is where I find I am most in awe of artistry, is when people are really, really fucking good at editing down and being able, like you can't take, you know, like if I think of, you know, my favorite John Prine line or my favorite Gordon Lightfoot line or whatever it might be. It's like, you can't take a word out. You can't change a note in the melody, and it's just not the thing anymore. You know what I mean? Like that is,
But that's such a, it's such a difficult, there's so many hours of just doing the thing that have to occur to, whatever reason, to just intellectually understand that. And I don't know why that is, right? Maybe I'm just stupid.
Yeah,
but
I'm stupid. Yeah, I don't know. I think like what's interesting to me is like, I think early on, or at least when I was starting to really get a grasp on what I would say was like my style and writing style, I would write like 20 verses to a song. Like I would like do, I would get as many verse options as I could, and I'd rhyme as many times as I could, and I'd just obsess over it, and that breeded pretty good results. But it also was very lengthy process to then edit down what it's going to be, you know. So now I kind of just trust what it is when I write it out, you know, because I'm like, okay, like this, as long as it's serving the purpose of telling the story that I am currently trying to, or express the motion I'm currently trying to express, whatever it is, as long as it's serving that purpose of like the song, right? I'm good with it usually. Mm-hmm. And I try not to be too nitpicky, though I am. And what I've found is that I'll like play these songs. I'll play these songs live, primarily like solo. Like I've got a handful of like solo stuff I'm about to do. I like to like take the songs out and like I'll just play them new for an audience and realize, oh, okay, like actually this line is better served here, I need to rhyme another part of this here to make this make sense.
And I think that there's something so powerful in that because I think this is true in all music and all art, right? The thing is, it's not done. It's constantly a living thing, right?
Yeah.
At least in this form of art, right? Like it's, as a songwriter, you know that, well, yeah, I played the song like this yesterday, but I'm going to play the song again tomorrow. And someone else will play the song after me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully if it's a good song, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so because the thing is constantly in motion, I think great songwriters can continue that editing, right? I mean, now there's obviously a point of diminishing returns where if your mental attention is spent on this thing that you've already done the editing on, you can't edit on something new, right? So there's just like anything, it's trade-offs. But being able to recognize in the moment, oh, this thing that I thought was, you know, air quotes around done, isn't really done. There's some shifting that needs to happen. I think that's something that kind of can separate, again, the sort of the decent from the great, to be able to sit in that pocket and recognize when that needs to occur. That's huge. And I think a lot of people are afraid to do that because people just want to kind of like wash their hands of and be like, okay, I'm done. I don't want anything to do with it again, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said about like, that's the purpose of recording in a certain sense is
for
to,
sure, yeah,
to solidify that is the song, like that's, it's done. Mm-hmm. It is done. And like after you're done kind of like, well, you know, workshopping it for a period of time depending, and then like, sometimes you get lucky and they just like fall out of the sky, like it's like, oh, okay, like this just hit me like
good day, you know?
Yeah, it's a good day. Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, just trying to have more good days than bad and figure it out, you know.
Nice, nice. Yeah, and I mean, again, I think kind of going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this, Nashville's good for that. It's good for keeping things in perspective because there's so many people here who are simultaneously sort of in the trenches with you, so to speak, and, you know, suffering alongside. But also there are people that you see who have done this at a high level and who have kind of not so much come out the other side, but that have good lives and like, this is what they do and this is their livelihood. And so it's, you kind of get the best of both worlds here in a way that I don't think you get if you're, you know, somewhere else kind of being the big kahuna, you know?
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, it's like proof of concept, you know, it's like, okay, like if you, it's kind of what we were talking about, earlier with like, you know, A plus B equals C or whatever, you know, it's like 1 + 1 = 2. You know, it helps it make sense. It helps it like, and I've said this before too. It's like being here. It's like if I just live in Nashville as a songwriter the rest of my life, like I that's a hill I'm like willing to die on at this point. I'm like, cool. Yeah, actually not a bad gig. Yeah. Like it's totally fine.
I like
fine.
That gig. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's cool because it does have like a historical precedence here as well that like many people have come before all of us to like create this, you know, kind of lore of Nashville and of, of the music industry that is here, and it exists in a way that really is just like it's kind of after living in like many different places, it's like it's can be beat as far as that goes. You know, it's good,
beautiful.
Yeah,
it's an interesting city. Did you notice how this has nothing to do with anything we talked about today?
Great.
But this is so funny. I was me and the gal were just like running some errands earlier today, and there was a kid. We were at Goodwill, and there was a kid with a backpack. Okay, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I saw it was fucking hilarious. It was huge. It was probably like this big, see-through plastic backpack with a massive fucking bunny in it. Like an actual rabbit. He was like taking his bunny out to Goodwill. And I don't know why I'm saying this, but I just thought this was like the craziest fucking thing. It was like, you know, some 8-year-old kid who had a massive bunny backpack on. And I was like,
yeah, I hope he had the holes poked through that thing. I mean, Jesus, it's like kind of scary for that bunny.
I was like, man, that bunny is having a time now, dude.
That bunny's got a good life.
Yeah, I guess that's a way of saying that Nashville's fucking crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Great, but crazy.
Yeah.
Which Goodwill? Were you at the one over here?
Yeah, I was at the one over here.
You'll see some shit over there.
Yeah. For real.
It's a good,
Mass and Goodwill.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. But he looked alive. He was very, very scared, a little terrified. But, anyway. But, dude, I had to say, like, I'm really glad that you did this, man. This was
yeah, I'm stoked
this
about
was
it, man.
A ton of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
The song sounded great. I'm really excited to hear the full record. Like, I'm stoked to hear the record.
Well, I'll send it over to you.
No, please
do.
I really love that.
Secret SoundCloud link.
Early access. Honestly, that SoundCloud might be the number one perk of doing this silly show is like over the, you know, we've done a good amount of them at this point. And, you know, we'll have someone on who's like putting out a record. They're like, I'll send it to you. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm also working on, I do want to get like a pre-order for some vinyl going. So like that would probably include
too. So, I love it. I love it. Yeah. We'll shoot you all this stuff, but thanks for doing this, man. This was fun.
Right
on. Cool. Nice.
Fuck yeah, dude. Good
shit. That was killer.
That was fun, man.
That
was awesome. Excited to see how
this
goes.
Dude, this song sounds great.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Because it's always interesting.